Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, people, thank you for holding on. Once again, this is Memorial Day weekend. It is May the 23rd, the year of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, 2020. And, you know, we'd like to wish you people a happy Memorial Day, especially to all you fellow veterans and all you people out there that have veterans in your family. Lord knows there's been millions of them. We were talking about before the second hour in the first segment about the millions of people who have been killed during the war, killed and maimed. You know, the mental, the destruction of the psyche, the mental, the physical destruction, the diseases that, you know, from untold number of vaccines, the chemicals that were dropped on you, it goes, it's endless. I don't think anybody really knows, Gene, how many millions of people have been killed in all the wars. And before we go to your expertise, you could teach a course. In fact, you probably have on the Civil War, but you know. Since going back in the War of Independence in 1776, the first one in the Civil War, and I mean, most of these wars are started by bankers, especially World War One, World War Two, the Spanish-American War. You know, got us in. We talked about the false flag and Havana Harbor when our own people blew up the battleship Maine that got us in the war against Spain. And matter of fact, I know I've heard you talk about that yourself, Gene. You know, the getting us into World War One by sinking our own people sunk the ship, the cruiser, the Lusitania, killing American people. They sent that ship in there intentionally, knowing that there were German U-boats there, sink that boat to get our poor people inflamed to get us into war. World War Two, false flag Vietnam, you know, the Gulf of Tonkin. It goes on and on and on. These false flags getting into war. Millions, millions, millions. Alexander Solzhenitsyn said, I think he said there was like upwards of 66 million people killed, and a lot of them died at the hands of the Jewish gulagers, you know, the Cheka, the NKV, died at these concentration camps, the largest concentration camps in the world in Soviet and Siberia. But Gene, we all know that, but let's go back to, if you will, Gene, if you don't mind, let's go back and start with your expertise. Before I ask you about some specifics about the things that you're involved in. Matt, I'll tell you what, let me ask you that right now before I forget. Gene, tell the people, I know you did this a week or two ago, but tell them again what you're involved in, you know, up there with the trying to get the great General Nathan Bedford Forrest, him and his wife reinterred, what you do and how people can help donate labor, money, etc. Tell them about that, Gene.
Well, now, I haven't done that. That's some other people in the Sons of Confederate Veterans that have been working on that, and some attorneys that have gone after the city of Memphis for the desecration of a gravesite, and the Forrest descendants have gotten these attorneys to really rake the city of Memphis over the coals with threats of going to jail for what they've done, and finally got the city to agree to have these bodies exhumed from Forest Park in Memphis, where they were moved from Hollywood Cemetery over to Forest Park in 1909, reburied there. A beautiful monument was built there, and one of the finest equestrian statues in the world of General Forrest on his horse was placed at the top of this monument there. And at that time, it was a very nice section of Memphis, but like all of our cities, the interior parts of the cities have just been taken over by the lower class and the hangers-on and the welfare parasites, and it's pretty much destroyed our inner cities all across the whole country, not just in Memphis, but Birmingham, Chicago, Detroit, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., wherever you go, it's just like a swarm of locusts that have come in and destroyed our inner cities. So the Memphis City Council and the mayor wanted to get rid of the Forrest statue and did illegally, and now the family has sued the city, had sued the city of Memphis, and finally an agreement has been reached to reinter the bodies from Forest Park in Memphis, where they still are, and it's just been barricaded off and grown up in weeds, but move them from there to the Sons of Confederate Veterans headquarters in Columbia, Tennessee. And that was, in fact, that was supposed to have been done this morning. The reinterment ceremony was supposed to have been this morning, Saturday, May 23rd at 10 a.m. at Sons of Confederate Veterans headquarters at Elm Springs in Columbia. And then this afternoon at 2 o'clock was supposed to have been the dedication ceremony for the new Confederate Museum that's been built there. A beautiful building and just a state-of-the-art building and a place that we can have our Confederate history and not have it reinterpreted and lied about like they're doing at so many museums across the country, even if they claim to be a Confederate museum. This one will tell the truth. So now all of that has been postponed until later on this fall, and the week of that celebration and the reburial is going to be the same. But they haven't confirmed the date yet. It's probably end of September, sometime during October. Tuesday and Wednesday, the body of General Forrest and his wife will lay in state at the Nathan Bedford Forrest Boyhood Home near Chapel Hill, Tennessee. That's Tuesday and Wednesday, and be open to the public. Thursday and Friday, they will be taken to Sons of Confederate Veterans headquarters at Elm Springs in Columbia, Tennessee. They will lay in state there. Once again, they will the caskets will be opened, not open, but the viewing of the caskets will be open to the public. And then on Saturday morning will be the burial ceremony there at Elm Springs. This is property owned by the Sons of Confederate Veterans, private property. So we don't have to go through this hassle again with these political entities that bow down to the lowest class in society. So they will be reburied there. The base of the monument will be rebuilt over the top of the grave sites. And then the equestrian statue of General Forrest, which the Sons of Confederate Veterans actually have now in safe storage in Columbia, Tennessee, will be placed back on the granite base, just like it was at Forest Park in Memphis. And we also had the statue of President Jefferson Davis that's been removed from Confederate Park on the banks of the Mississippi River. That will also be placed outside there at the Confederate Museum in Columbia, Tennessee. So we just don't have the date yet, but the weekly ceremony that's going to take place will be the same Tuesday and Wednesday, then Thursday and Friday, and then the reburial on Saturday and the dedication of the museum on Saturday afternoon. So.
You know, Gene, you took me back to my childhood. I'm 73 years old, but I've been in Memphis since I was about four. I remember many a day running barefooted. Kids didn't have shoes in those days during the summertime, at least us poor people. And I remember many a day running down Union Avenue between Union and I think that's Madison. Between, we used to have what they call, it used to be Forest Park before they changed the name.
Sir.
And we had the great statue there that chills go up down your spine. Even before I knew what it was, they had a wading pool there. And people, everybody respected the general in those days. They respected our culture. And you know, people, I know some of you people will say, well, why do you keep going over the same ground? Well, you know, I've explained before, I know there's got to be other people out there like me that learn by repetition. I study every day, and two or three days later, I forget stuff. But people, you cannot get enough. You cannot get too much of your culture, of your history. We're never going to quit going over that. I can't believe we got another break already. We'll be right back, people. After this break, we're going back to Gene Andrews. Be right back.
During our war for Southern independence, the brilliant Confederate general Robert E. Lee foretold the decline of this country when he prophesied, if those people, referring to the dictatorial federal government, if those people win this war, the United States will become a bully abroad and a tyrant at home. As Lee predicted, it has come to pass. The principles laid out in our founding documents, our Declaration of Independence, and the individual rights protected in our Constitution have been vilified and discarded. But not everyone has surrendered. Blood River Radio brings you highly respected, intelligent guests not afraid to speak the truth when the truth in America today is censored and attacked. Your contributions keep us on the air in order to fight against the bullies abroad and the tyrants at home. Send your war contributions to Blood River Radio, P.O. Box 34636, Bartlett, Tennessee 38184. That address is on our website, www.bloodriverradio.com. Don't let the bullies and the tyrants win.
I'm Pastor Everett Ramsey, pastor of Faith Baptist Church. A congregation of God's covenant people, informed Christians know that we are at the brink of a long-planned one-world government being executed that will not tolerate true Christian faith. There is a way to stop it. Our church has used God's spiritual weapons of warfare many times over the years, and in every case that was properly executed, the Church of Jesus Christ has been delivered. It is called the Court of Divine Justice. David used it many times. Read Psalm 37, Psalm 109. It includes truthful information, repentance, and imprecatory prayers. Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know that supports action based on truth about lies concerning the Confederacy, the Civil Rights Movement, the German people, the true Holocaust, and who the true covenant people of God are, and the sins and failures of the churches, if any of these. This means anything to you, and it should, then please say so with your money, as well as prayers. You may obtain information from us about the Courts of Divine Justice by sending your offering and request to Blood River Radio, and we take none of the money.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and, by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer's speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, "If there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people," unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Hey, Gene. You there, fella? Did you hear that last commercial?
I certainly did. And my thanks and compliments to Sam. He is brilliant to be able to take that and turn it around and replay it. I tell you what, I didn't know I could get that information to y'all, but Sam is a genius with electronics, and my compliments,
you know what,
for doing that.
He even took out the self-deprecation part. Yeah, man. I mean, you know what? And I'll second what Sam said. That I think that's probably our best commercial for sure.
Well,
and it's the best written.
Such a great job. He actually made me sound like I was intelligent. So, you know,
you know what? You sounded just like Elvis, man.
What's that? He photoshopped a verbal commercial. That's what he did.
That's exactly. And he did it. I'm sitting there. I thought, what the hell commercial? He said, you need to listen to this, pay real close attention to this commercial. I thought, commercial. I couldn't believe it was you again. He did it on air while we're going back and forth. I mean,
oh,
I tell you what, I'm just damn glad he's on our side. Because you know what? God only knows, we'd probably be having some kind of a itching powder in our pants if he wouldn't. I mean, the guy could.
Well, he did a superb job, and my compliments to him. He did an outstanding
my
job.
My compliments.
That. So I hope you can use that. If it helps, that's all I want to do. Help you out.
Well, I tell you what, I guarantee we're going to use it, brother. I guarantee you. And my compliments to you, too. And I second what Sam said. It was the best written. You did a fantastic
job.
Well,
I think the historical point is this, that Lee predicted what was going to happen to this country, that the United States would become a bully abroad and a tyrant at home. And we've seen that with the draconian laws that have been placed on us after 9/11 and questioned about how much the United States knew about how that was going to happen and who set the explosive charges to bring down those buildings. And the wars that we've been involved in, the countries that we've gone into, the governments we've destroyed in Libya and Syria and trying to take over these countries and Afghanistan, and it goes on and on and on and on. It's never ending. And I think it was Paul Craig Roberts or Pat Buchanan said, endless wars for endless peace. And it just keeps going on. And Lee predicted that. And with the destruction of the Confederate States and the destruction of the conservative Democratic Party, it left no opposition. And the Eastern banksters and the radical Republicans for years and years and years ran this country as virtual dictatorship and set the tone for getting us, just like you talked about earlier before the break, light us into a war with Spain so they could take their colonies. They light us into a war with Germany in 1917 to bail out the banksters, the Rothschilds, the Bank of England. That lion dog Roosevelt light us into a war with Japan so he could get a backdoor war with Germany and save his communist buddies. We all know the Gulf of Tonkin was a lie, the Gulf of Tonkin resolution that Lion Lyndon put on us right there. The same thing going into Iraq for weapons of mass destruction that didn't exist. But millions of dollars were made off the lives of the poor boys that sacrificed their lives. And talk about sacrificing lives this weekend on Memorial Day weekend. Of so many of those young men and women at times, too, that were killed in just useless wars. And the gentleman that you had on last week, one of the finest Southern gentlemen I've ever met, Buddy Kirtland, he sent me a quote that said, those who suffer and die in war will never profit from it, and those who profit from war will never suffer and die in it. And that is so true. That is so true.
Brilliant. That's absolutely brilliant. That sounds something like General Smedley Butler, a Marine. I'm sure you know about Smedley.
Oh, absolutely.
Butler, the general, what major general? I think he was up to be the commandant of the Marine Corps, but I'm not sure. He wouldn't play ball. But you know something else, Gene? I don't know if you noticed this or not, but you also said this. You gave a quote that George Orwell put threw out there too: "Endless war for endless peace, kill for God, so to speak." You know, if you can't convert them, kill them. But, you know, he also said, if you notice this, you always have to have an enemy. The great professor Anthony Sutton wrote volumes on this. I know I'm repeating myself about this. He said that what the United States was in the business of doing, our super government, they have to have an enemy to keep we the people duped. If you ever seen this movie, you read the book 1984, they would have hate sessions where they'd have the people standing up, looking in front of their screens, looking at the big enemy was called Goldstein. They would say, hate, hate, hate. They'd whip them into a frenzy, but they would switch enemies. The Goldstein would, Big Brother would come on and I'm getting to a point, Big Brother would come on the screen and he would say, people, yesterday we were at war against Oceania. Oceania was one of the countries in the world at that time. But today, just since last night, 1201, we've stopped killing Oceanians, and Oceanians quit killing us. Now we're our friends. Now we're against mitochondria or whatever it was. But they switch sides all the time. And I'm sure you picked them
up. Change all the history books to say that we'd always been on the side of our new ally. And, you know, the things we said about when we were at war with them 20 or 30 years ago, that didn't matter anymore. So they rewrote the history books to change it, and now that was our new ally. Yes, and that's exactly what's happened.
Well, you can see it even right now. I mean, I don't know if people have noticed it, but it's recently is like New Year's. It was the Russians. We hate the Russians. The Russians, they tamper with the election. They're stealing our kids. You know, they're flagging in the aliens. They control our elections. It was the Russians. All of a sudden, you don't hear jack about the Russians. Now all of a sudden it's the Chinese we got to hate. We got to hate the Chinese. It's right in front of our eyes. When you get be as old as we are, and you've lived through all this, and you did just a medium of reading and studying true history, it's so obvious what they're doing. They're baiting and switching with all these people. They got these young people just whipped into a frenzy. Yeah, we got to kill those Chinese. Well, friends, and this will be, I'm going to go back to Gene. I would think long and hard before I tried to invade the continent of China. You know, Douglas MacArthur himself, he said, don't ever get in a land war bogged down in Asia, like we did in Vietnam, because they have
that's
endless people.
That's what Goldwater said, and that's what cost him the election. He said, we don't have any business being involved in a land war in Asia. But he said, but if we're going in to Indochina or Vietnam, then he said, we need to get in, get it over with, and get out. And, of course, they just portrayed him in the 1964 presidential election as some kind of a nutcase that had his thumb on the nuclear button ready to just blow up the world. And, of course, they made such ridiculed him so badly and accused him of saying all these things that he never said. And, of course, Johnson won the election in November, was inaugurated in January, March of 65. Then they sent the Marines into Da Nang, and there it went. We've got more and more troops, ground troops involved, and just what Goldwater said happened. You know, we don't need to be there. It's something we don't need to get into. But this piecemeal, sending a little bit here, a little bit there, that's no way to fight a war. And it proved what he said was true. There was an individual that was too smart to be president of the United States. Absolutely.
Yes, I tell you what, he was, well, Goldwater was one of my heroes in the old days. I'll see if I can paraphrase. He said something like, fanaticism in the defense of liberty is no vice, and pacifism in the face of force is no virtue, something like that.
Absolutely.
He said that,
yeah.
He said in the defense of liberty, true liberty, I'm not talking about us, you know, which country is our Sodom on the Potomac going to bomb tomorrow. I'm talking about true liberty. You know, he said there is you can't be a fanatic when you're trying to defend liberty. People, y'all can pull that up. It's easy to find. I would do it now, but I can't do it. But that's absolutely true. You know, and Gene, it all started going all the way back to the Lincoln's war against the United States, and even before that. But you know, the Lincoln's war is Gene Andrews' expertise. I know I'm jumping all around, but there's something else I want. You said the captain. That General Nathan Bedford Forrest was so fond of, you know, when he got killed by the Yankees, they shot him. You know, he broke his foot. You talked about that the last time you were on. He rolled a cannon over his foot. I can't remember the captain's name.
Captain,
but you also
meant that happened in the first battle at Franklin in April of 1863.
When we come back, I want you to talk about that. And you said something like he had, the general had a detachment, I guess, to guard him. I want you to talk about the detachment. People, we got to go to a quick break. Be right back.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with John Hunt.
As part of the Paycheck Protection Program, a federally funded relief effort designed to assist small businesses, 38 Planned Parenthood affiliates across the country received more than $80 million. The Women's Healthcare Group claims its corporate structure, which separates its affiliates from the national office, makes their independent clinics eligible for the funds. The Small Business Administration, the U.S. government agency tasked with approving the loans, appears to disagree. According to a letter sent to Planned Parenthood affiliates, the SBA preliminarily concluded the clinic was a local affiliate of Planned Parenthood Federation of America, therefore ineligible for the loan under the rules. The loan should be returned immediately. But if Planned Parenthood disagrees with that conclusion, the SBA writes it will conduct a full investigation. This is USA Radio News.
Balance of nature, changing the world one life at a time.
I haven't got a cold in 2.5 years. My wife can't argue with my track record because she's seen me not get sick. My daughter got sick over Christmas. My wife got it about 3 days after she left. I went through both of them, didn't get sick. I tell people I like to think my immune system is armored up and I'm able to repel these simple, stupid colds. And if it isn't that, then what is it? Because I'd get at least a couple colds a year. And what has changed in the last 2.5 years? The only thing I can think of is I'm taking my fruits and vegetables, you know, the balance of nature.
Experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself. Right now, Balance of Nature is offering free shipping and 35% off on any new preferred order. Start your journey to better health today by calling 1-800-246-8751 or by going to balanceofnature.com. And make sure to receive this special radio offer by using discount code USA.
With Memorial Day coming this weekend, beaches are reopening, cities are letting restaurants seat people outside and closing streets to encourage foot traffic, and many national parks are also letting people back in. Second Lady Karen Pence spoke at the Smoky Mountain National Park in Tennessee.
Not only are these experiences enjoyable to have, but they're good for us too.
Stay-at-home orders have been eased in many cities just as temperatures are warming up for the holiday weekend.
And the Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue, announced that the U.S. Department of Agriculture would provide up to $1 billion in guaranteed loans to rural businesses and farmers in an effort to help them survive the coronavirus. The USDA is committed to being a strong partner to those rural businesses and agricultural producers and being a strong supporter of all aspects to the rural economy, according to Perdue. The policy change opens up eligibility to some agriculture producers who were not able to receive loans from the USDA Farm Service Agency program. This is USA Radio News.
Go ahead. Make my day.
People, thank you oh so much for hanging out with this super special broadcast. I mean, anytime you have Mr. Marine Jeans on, you know you're going to have one dynamite show. The guy's an absolute brain. He really is. I don't care what he says about himself. He is a man, a man's man. Me and Sam were talking about him during the break. Anyway, Gene, go back and tell us about a little bit about that captain. Also, I think you said something about there was a detachment, maybe a squad, probably not a company size of men. I look at it kind of like, I don't know much about generals. I never hung around generals. But did he have something like a bodyguard mount or something?
Yes, he did.
Tell us a little bit about
that. Was known as Forrest Escort Company. And during the war, generals were allowed to have a company, about 100 men, as an escort company. And basically for most of the generals, especially in the U.S. Army, the Union Army, the Confederates couldn't give up that many people. The escort company for the Union generals were like, you know, son-in-law, nephew, you know, people that wanted to dress up in a fancy uniform and say they fought in the war, but not get up too close to the front. And they rode around with the general, protected the general, delivered messages, things like that, and sort of the whole stay in the rear with the gear type of operation. But Forrest Escort Company was a totally different operation. This was like Army Special Forces, Marine Recon, Navy SEALs. These were the toughest of the toughest. And when a battle was hanging in the balance, Forrest would throw in his escort company. And most of them were young men, teenagers and very early 20s, just, you know, go riding hell-bent for leather right into the follow the sound of the guns, right into the worst part of the battle and turn the scale. Forrest Escort Company, like I said, would be about 100 men, but during the course of the war, they went through over 262 men in that 100-man escort company. But so many of them were killed and wounded and infirmed and had to be discharged out of that particular unit. So the Forrest Escort Company, like I said, was probably the toughest of one of the toughest units in all of the Confederate Army. And even the infantry respected them. They said a lot of times when a cavalry unit would be riding by, the infantry would start making fun of them and hollering at them. And, you know, and I think General D.H. Hill in the Army of Northern Virginia said he was very unpopular there because he said he'd never seen a dead cavalry trooper, meaning that when it fighting got tough, the cavalry bailed out. But they said when the cavalry was coming up the road, the infantry would start hollering at them and making fun of them. Then they would find out it was Forrest Cavalry or Forrest Escort Cavalry. They would shut up because they knew their reputation, and they knew what tough fighters they were, and they went right to the front of the battlefield. So that's what Forrest Escort Company was. And then you were talking about Captain Samuel Freeman. Captain Freeman was Forrest's first chief of his artillery. And in April of 1863, what happened, let's back it up just a little bit and give a recap of what happened. New Year's Eve, December of 1862 through January 2nd, 1863, was fought the Battle of Murfreesboro. And Braxton Bragg won the first day and bent the Union Army back into a real sharp V there on the banks of the Stones River in Murfreesboro. And Bragg had the innate ability of snatching defeat from the jaws of victory, and then decided to fall back and give up the hard-won battle that they'd fought there and fell back to a line along the Duck River south of Murfreesboro along Shelbyville and Columbia and that area right there. While this was going on, Forrest was on a raid into West Tennessee, and he had completely destroyed the Mobile and Ohio Railroad, and coupled with Earl Van Doren's raid against the Grant supply line at Holly Springs, caused Grant to turn around and retreat back to Memphis. He was pursuing a campaign against Vicksburg overland through Mississippi, and with Forrest taking out the railroad and Van Dorn taking out his supply depot, he had to turn around and go back to Memphis. So Forrest was not there for the Battle of Murfreesboro. If he had been, probably been a different story, and General Rosecrans would have been driven out of Middle Tennessee, and Bragg could have recaptured Nashville, but, you know, that's a lot of what-ifs. So when Forrest got back, then he was put in charge of Bragg's Army of Tennessee on the western or left flank at Columbia. Joe Wheeler's cavalry was put on the right flank over near where I-24 is today, cutting through that section of Middle Tennessee. So Forrest's idea of defending was to go after the Federal Army wherever he could hit them. And so they were coming up out of Lewisburg, Tennessee, which is about 15, 20 miles south of Franklin. They were coming up the Lewisburg Pike into Franklin. He had his scouts out in front. The main body of the cavalry was out in front. They had the artillery in the middle of the column and more cavalry covering the rear. Just by chance, a Federal cavalry unit, the 4th U.S. Cavalry, was coming over from Murfreesboro in toward Franklin and ran smack into the middle of Forrest's column. They hit the artillery. They were trying to unlimber the guns, turn them around. A lot of firing was going on, shooting back and forth. One of the guns rolled over the foot of Captain Freeman, broke his foot, and the Federals captured two or three of the artillery pieces, and they heard Forrest's cavalry that'd been up at the head of the column. They heard all this firing going on. They turned around. They were coming back. So they knew the main body of the cavalry was coming back after them. So they told the gunners to run. They were prisoners. They told them to run. Captain Freeman couldn't run, and a Federal officer took a pistol and shot him right through the face and killed him. The main body of the Forrest cavalry came back, drove the Federals away, recaptured their captured artillery again, and then they found the body of Captain Freeman laying on the ground, and Forrest came back and dismounted and broke into tears when he held Captain Freeman. He said, "He's a brave man, none braver, none braver." And from that time on, they took no prisoners from the 4th U.S. Cavalry because they shot and killed a man that was basically unarmed and crippled and, you know, another war crime that was committed against Southern soldiers, like the murder of Sam Davis, like the torture, mutilation, and murder of DeWitt Smith Job on the Nolensville Pike there in Triune. And so many of these things went on and on and on and on. And they say, yes, war is terrible, and these things happen. But in that war, it was a government policy. There was no regard for prisoners of war. There was no regard for civilians. Civilians were murdered. Civilian homes were looted, destroyed. They destroyed the economy of the South. They destroyed the way just for people to survive. They would go into a farm and take manure from the stables and dump it down the well, which had poisoned the water. You got cholera from drinking water that had been poisoned with horse and cow manure. They would take salt from the smokehouse and plow it into the fields, which would destroy those fields. You could never get that salt out of the ground. And so for agriculture and growing crops and putting in a garden, that ground or that soil was absolutely worthless. So not only did they just steal everything they could get out of the houses and the homes, they destroyed their ways and means of making a living. And what livestock they couldn't take with them, they just shot it and left the carcasses of mules and horses and cattle and even children's pets, ponies and dogs, left these carcasses to rot out in the fields. And then they can't understand why the South had such hatred and venom for Lincoln's Republican Party, and why the South for nearly 100 years was a one-party system. And I can remember that as a boy, that in Tennessee, the election was the Democratic primary. And most of the times, the Republicans wouldn't even run a candidate in the general election. And we had one Republican senator out of our nine in Tennessee, usually from East Tennessee. And all the rest were Democrats, because the Republican Party was so hated in the South for not only the war, but what they did to the South after the war during Reconstruction. And that's why it took over 100 years for Republicans to be elected to any office in the South. So I hope that answered your question.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did, Professor.
And what happened to us during the war. And they say, you know, well, get over it, get over it, get over it. Well, yeah, I guess you can now, but it took for nearly 100 years for the South to recover economically from what happened to that war. There was no Marshall Plan to rebuild the South after the war. The carpetbaggers and the Army of Occupation, the Freedmen's Bureau, the Loyal League, were turned loose on the South, not to rebuild the South, but to take everything that hadn't been destroyed during the war, and parts of the South that hadn't felt the war, that weren't in these war areas, war zones, like between Nashville and Atlanta and Washington and Richmond, D.C., Richmond, Virginia, they felt the brunt of Reconstruction, and they had a war brought down on them that in some cases was even worse than the actual fighting war and what happened there. So that's why there was so much hatred toward Lincoln, toward the radical Republican Party, and the Republican Party in general after the war, and lasted for, like I said, nearly 100 years. So,
Gene, I know you can't read minds, but do you think Lincoln had he knew how horrible the war crimes were going to be against the Southern people when he got that war started up? I mean, these war crimes started like you've just told us, you've educated us all, but while the war was still going on, and like you said, you know, a lot of people don't know. You'll never see this in history books. There's another break, but people. Hey, Gene, don't let me forget. I'm real forgetful. We want to go back to the exact point when we come back from the break. People, you're listening to Professor Gene Andrews, Mr. Marine Gene himself.
Don't call me names on the air. We're going to get a fight started.
We'll be right back, people. Hang on to your seats.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern Nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Hey, this is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard-right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
A Bienus is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Well, wonderful people, family of Blood River Radio, thank you so much for being here with us tonight. And before I forget, I'd like to wish you happy Memorial Day again, in case some of you people just tuned in recently. In case you just tuned in, we have Gene Andrews on, Marine. Once a Marine, always a Marine. You know, he's giving us a history lesson, a virtual history. It's a history lesson that you'll get nowhere else. The man is really incredible. I love listening to him. I never get tired of it. And you shouldn't get tired of it either, because no matter where you live in the United States, north or south of the Mason-Dixon line, you know, being a Southerner, and I've always said a lot of it has to do with the state of the mind, state of the heart. We have supporters north of the Mason-Dixon line. We're not talking about those people that support us. We're not talking about the good people. We talk about how evil these people were. We're talking about this evil, incredible evil that's inflicted upon the Southern people. I don't think there was any greater terrorist action inflicted on anybody anywhere, unless it would be with at the Ukrainian Holodomor. But, you know, before we went to the break, Gene, God bless you, fellas. You're amazing. We were talking. I was asking you if you, and I know you couldn't possibly know this, but do you think that Lincoln had any inkling that the Southern people would be just punished so much with so much terrorist activity during that war?
I don't think he cared. I've heard Southern historians say, well, if Lincoln had won, it would have been a different outcome, because Lincoln said that he wanted the states brought back into the Union, and he, I think his quote was, let them up easy. But Lincoln was the ultimate politician. He could talk out of both sides of his mouth at the same time. Lincoln, we have to remember, Lincoln was a consummate liar. When the Confederate states seceded, the Southern states seceded, and they sent commissioners to Washington to negotiate the withdrawal of federal troops from Fort Sumter in Charleston Harbor and Fort Pickens in Pensacola Harbor, the commissioners weren't allowed to meet with Lincoln, because he said himself, if he met with them, that would recognize the Confederate States of America as a legitimate country, and he wasn't going to do it. So he had his Secretary of State, Seward, meet with these people, and he told them through Lincoln, oh, don't worry about it. We'll get this worked out. We'll get it taken care of. It's a problem. We'll get taken care of. Don't worry about Charleston. Don't worry about Pensacola. We'll get it taken care of. Just wait till tomorrow. Well, tomorrow would come. They would stall again. They would stall again. While all this was going on, they were outfitting a fleet in New York to be sent to Charleston to reinforce and resupply Fort Sumter. The lie that Lincoln came up with was that the Confederates were starving the troops out of Fort Sumter, which was a lie. They were going in, taking a boat from Fort Sumter, which sits out in the middle of the harbor there in Charleston and blocks the harbor. And that's why the federal, back up a minute, that's why the federal troops were sent from Fort Moultrie on the north side of the harbor out to Fort Sumter. Fort Sumter wasn't completed. The only people that were there were a construction crew and a lighthouse keeper, and it was under construction. But the federal troops were ordered from Fort Moultrie on the north side of the harbor out to Fort Sumter, which completely blocked the harbor. And now they had an enemy force sitting in the middle of a harbor in the Confederate States of America. But they weren't being starved, because every day they would send a boat from Fort Sumter into the market in Charleston, buy supplies, bring it back out to Fort Sumter. So they were not being starved, but Lincoln claimed that they were. So they were sending this fleet down there while they were negotiating with the Confederate commissioners in Washington, and behind their back, this fleet was being sent there. Word got out that this fleet was headed to Charleston, and Lincoln said that he needed a war and he needed the South to fire the first shot, because they weren't going to come back in on their own. And so Lincoln said that you can stay out of the Union. You don't have to come back. You can have your own country. You can keep your slaves as long, if that's important to you, which it wasn't to the South, but everybody thinks it was. He said, you can stay out of the Union. You can keep your slaves as long as you pay your taxes to the United States. Now, that makes a lot of sense. That's like having...
That sounds familiar with what's going on today.
Yeah, well, that's like the Al-Qaeda having a missile battery at the Verrazano Narrows in New York and saying, well, ships can come into New York Harbor, but they've got to pay taxes to Hezbollah or Al-Qaeda or ISIS or something like that. How long would we allow them to keep a missile battery at the Verrazano Narrows in New York and not allow ships to come into New York Harbor unless they paid a tax to ISIS? Well, that's the same situation the South was facing. We had a foreign enemy that had a fort blocking one of our major ports and saying, you're going to have to pay taxes to this foreign country to allow ships to come into Charleston. So all the negotiations that they're, and even the morning of April 12th, when they finally opened fire on Fort Sumter, they'd gone to Major Anderson out there and said, look, we won't fire on the fort. We'll fire on these ships that are coming in here if you don't open fire on us, on the batteries around Charleston Harbor, the artillery around Charleston Harbor. He said, I can't do that. He said, I'm under orders that as soon as you open fire, Fort Sumter's going to open fire back on you. And at 4:30 that morning, they were still trying to negotiate some kind of peace settlement because they knew this was going to be a war. I mean, the Confederates, we are portrayed on television and in the news as a bunch of doofus Forrest Gumps running around, but they had brilliant statesmen and brilliant officers, and they knew exactly what was going to happen and what Lincoln was trying to do. And they knew that when they fired that first shot and the U.S. flag was fired on, it was going to be Lincoln's war that he wanted, but you either have a country or you don't. And they were going to have to defend their country, and they knew it was going to happen sooner or later. If it wasn't Charleston, it'd be Fort Pickens, or it would be some other incident that was going to happen, that Lincoln was going to provoke a war. So would Lincoln have, would, did Lincoln know that this was going to happen to the South? Of course he did. He wanted it to happen. He said he needed a war, and he needed the South to fire the first shot. And the war crimes that were committed against the South during the war, prisoner of war camps in the North, which were death camps, where the guards were just firing indiscriminately into the barracks, where they were frozen, where they were denied medical treatment, while they were denied winter clothing in Elmira, that was called Elmira, New York. They wouldn't give them winter clothing. Their excuse was that when the temperature got down below zero for weeks on end, that they couldn't give them winter clothing because they might escape and then they would be mistaken for civilians. So they just let them freeze to death. Johnson's Island in Ohio, and Camp Douglas in Chicago, and the hated Point Lookout in Maryland, all of these things. Lincoln knew that was going on. It was a way of exterminating Confederate soldiers. And he stopped the prisoner exchange. And, of course, the only prisoner of war camp we ever hear about is Andersonville in Georgia. How terrible that was. Oh, the Southerners were terrible. They starved these poor Union soldiers. Oh, they were horrible. They wouldn't give them medicine. They starved them. They never mentioned the fact that the guards got the same rations as the prisoners, and they were just as bad a shape as the prisoners were, because the railroad system, the transportation system in the South had been torn to pieces. The means of growing food had been taken away from the Southerners, so the Southern civilians were starving. And the Union prisoners were starving because Lincoln stopped the prisoner exchange. And they even admitted and said, look, we can't feed our own people. You've captured Jacksonville, Florida, and that's the closest city to Andersonville. You send supplies over to your prisoners and medical supplies and have the Sanitary Commission, which was the forerunner of the Red Cross, you have the Sanitary Commission go with them to make sure that we don't take the food and medicine and it goes to your prisoners. Lincoln wouldn't do it. He would let his men starve there for a political reason and propaganda to say that these prisoners were treated so horribly, and that he didn't care because, you know, they weren't any of his family. And so he needed that as a propaganda tool to use against the South. And Major Wirtz, who was the commander there, he didn't run off and hide. He said, well, here are the records of all the men that died here. Here's where they're buried. Here's the names. Here's where the units they were in and everything. He gave the records over to him. Of course, they took him to Washington and had this phony trial for him. And the only people they were allowed to testify were people that would testify against him. And, of course, surprise, he was found guilty and sentenced to death. The night before they were getting ready to execute him, they came to him and said, look, if you'll say that Jefferson Davis ordered you to mistreat these prisoners and starve them and deny them medical treatment, we'll release you. Because they had no charges against Jefferson Davis. He'd been captured. He was in the dungeon down at Fortress Monroe, and they couldn't figure out how to put him on trial because the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court said, you don't want to put him on trial because you can't prove that secession was illegal. And so since you can't prove it, this trial is going to say that we fought a four-year war for nothing, an illegal war against the South. So you can't put Jefferson Davis on trial. So they had to come up with some scam to convict Davis of treason or war crimes or something. So they asked Major Wirtz, we'll spare your life if you'll testify that President Jefferson Davis ordered you to mistreat the
Gene, we're just here. About out of time, fellow.
And his answer was, I'm a dead man. He would not turn on Jefferson Davis.
You know what? When you come back to the next week, don't don't let me forget, let's start expanding upon what you have said about Jefferson Davis. We're just about out of time. Gene, you're amazing.
I've enjoyed it, Eddie. We had a great time. Hope our listeners enjoyed it. I don't know how many of them out there are asleep, but play some loud music and wake them up.
Amen. Amen. We, and you know, and we'll also relate everything you said what went on during this Lincoln's horrible terrorist war to what's going on today.
Absolutely. What went on. Where did it start? Started in 1861.
Sure did. And our you know, our Sons of Abraham brethren that ran the concentration camps in the Soviet Union there from 1918-1920. That's probably where they probably went to school with some of these northern people, these Yankees, these concentration camp masters. Well, people, that's thank you so much, Gene. Thank you, Sam. What a brilliant man, Sam. I cannot believe Sam did that daggum commercial while we were doing this show. Anyway, people, thank you so much for tuning in. And have a happy Memorial Day. Think about your culture. Think about your race. Think about your God. And if you will, we'll see you next week, same time, same place. God bless you. God bless you, Gene. God bless you, fam. Good night, everybody. Good night. God bless you, audience.